Another reporter checks in today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. A relatively new name has shown up in local bylines. We'll meet that person, Jack Cullen. Then meet Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Jack, you had the scoop of the year. Roald Tweet in a tuxedo.
That's right.
As you can see, he's not taken it off since, although I think the green cummerbund is a bit much. St. Patrick's Day is over, Roald.
A cummerbund I will never wear. I promise that now. I do have to compliment you, Jack, on that article. It's the only time I've been quoted, I think, in all the times I've been quoted in the newspaper, in which the quotes are absolutely accurate.
Wow. Well, that's great to hear. And it is good to see you in your classic cardigan today.
Yes, it is. It's good to I feel a lot better in it.
You're making a liar of me. I just said he's in a tuxedo. Radio, you can be in anything. Jack, how did you get into the newspaper game?
Well, I studied journalism at Augustana College. And from there, I had an internship at the Dispatch in Moline. And after graduating, I interned at the Wisconsin State Journal in Madison, where I grew up, and then rerouted back to the Quad Cities for a gig at the Quad City Times. Hmm. So I've been at the Times now for a little more than 3 years.
So you're not relatively new. I mean, you are 3 years is enough to establish you as one of the gang. Your writing is... I think I'd call it distinctive, wouldn't you, Roald?
Distinctive by not showing off, I would say. And I've been trying to figure out. Jack first came to my attention the very morning. In fact, he caught me in the barber shop getting my eyebrows trimmed by writing an article about a couple from Prophetstown who came to the Quad Cities to eat at the Olive Garden once a week and then went over to Barnes & Noble and looked for books that they could order on Amazon. And I thought, wow, this is really a neat article. I mean, it's not just a feature. It's a feature that is really well written. And just by chance, you know, on 2 hours later, there I was in the barbershop.
Yeah, and you were caught.
That's right.
How would you classify yourself? I know in the newspaper business as it is today, everyone has to wear every hat that's available. Do you consider yourself more a feature writer than a reporter or vice versa?
I would say I take a feature approach to news reporting. Mm-hmm. About a year ago, well, in January of 2016, my roles changed at the Times. I used to cover the city of Bettendorf, and we had a new executive editor come in, and I pitched some new roles. So I have now been writing Notes at Noon, which mm-hmm. is a column of sorts that focuses on the stories of people and places that sometimes fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily hard breaking news stories, but mm-hmm. stories about the ordinary, sometimes doing extraordinary things.
Do you find these on your own?
It's been a mix. I've walked down the street and found stories or wandered into a barbershop and found stories. But since starting Notes at Noon, I've really received a lot of feedback from the community in terms of tips and ideas and different places or things to check out.
Mm-hmm. And what determines whether or not you'll follow up on those tips?
Well, I will usually check into it myself. And if it's a individual, I'll try to contact them and see if there is a story there. But like Roald has told me, oftentimes if you scratch hard enough, everyone has a story. So I believe that the Quad Cities is chock full of stories, and it's fun to go out and find them in every little nook and cranny.
Now, you did not have role as a teacher, did you?
I did not.
No, I'd retired by the time.
Yeah, well, that explains the clarity of your writing then.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the when you said you trained to be a reporter at Augustana. What kind of journalism, what's journalism like these days at the college level?
So I had tried out a couple different majors, actually. I didn't declare my major until the end of my sophomore year, going into my junior year. At that point, I began writing for The Observer and taking classes under Jim Dyer, who was my journalism professor at that time and still serves as my mentor today. He no longer teaches at Augustana. He's at Knox College now. Mm-hmm. But getting involved in the student newspaper and getting our feet wet, reporting, interviewing, that's how I really sunk my teeth into news.
When I took college journalism at the college level back in the early 50s, it was still the old-fashioned journalism in which the reporter did everything he or she could to stay out of the story. It's like there never was a reporter there. This just happened. And then by the time I started teaching at Augie in 1960, the new journalism was on its way in which the reporter was not only free to enter the story, but in a lot of cases, I think, and to the detriment of journalism, be more important than what the guy was writing about. Hunter Thompson's Gonzo journalism, for instance.
So you're not,
you know, look at me, you know, no hands. I can look what I can do, and you forget the story. You seem to sort of fall in between what we might call Scylla and Charybdis, right? You aren't involved in your stories, but your style somehow, you know, your style seems to suit whatever you're writing about. So your style varies a little if you're talking about a couple, you know, a charming couple from Prophetstown and an old prof in a tux and Dick Stahl climbing bluffs and stuff. You don't write like Procrustes, right? Procrustes is a giant who had one bed, and if people coming to stay didn't fit, he stretched them out. If they were too long, he chopped their legs off. You seem to have some sort of ability that I don't think you learned in journalism class. That somehow is coming from somewhere inside you.
I like to pay attention to the details. When I'm out and about and interviewing someone, I think the details make the story. And I gain a lot of...
Explain that a little more. What do you mean the details make the story?
Well, details from what that couple from Prophetstown ordered for lunch and what they said during their prayer before they actually began eating. It shows the reader and tells the reader that I was there without me saying I was sitting across from them. It gives some color, adds some color to the story that allows readers to sit down with us at the table, for example. And I gain a lot of value from these experiences, but I do think it is important to stay away from making the stories all about me. That's not what it's about. It's about highlighting the diversity in the Quad Cities and the different types of people to, you know, bring out others out of their own bubbles.
So you would say even a reporter is a creative writer?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's how we...
And not just somebody who fills in the blanks.
Yeah, I think that's how we need to really engage my generation in terms of news and storytelling.
Well, mine
storytelling.
Too, I think. I mean, I really take to the that kind of journalism and you have several people at the Times that are capable of doing that, and
of course.
You are just the newest of them.
But, you know, that sounds to me like you're preparing to be a novelist when you get down to the details and so on, what they ordered, what they said in their prayer, what they looked at. That's the kind of detail that a novelist puts in, unless you're Elmore Leonard. So, you know, do you think of yourself as a... Let's say, is the writer in you becoming stronger and stronger a force rather than the reporter?
At this point, I see myself as a writer and a reporter. I enjoy writing long form, full of those details that we're talking about. And I could see myself writing a book someday if I found a topic or an issue that I was truly passionate about. But for now, I'm learning a ton and I'm able to experiment with my writing style and develop my voice on the newspaper platform, whether it's online or in print.
What is the pressure? Do you have deadline pressure?
Yes, deadlines are definitely still in the newspaper game. And sometimes writing these longer stories with these details is tough, especially when you're on a deadline. My Notes at Noon stories run online at noon on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and then in the following day's paper. So I need to make sure I have my stories done in time to make that digital deadline and then to go in the following day's print edition.
Do you change them moving from the computer to the newspaper?
It depends. With hard breaking news, you know, we will put something out on the web and then add to it for the print edition. And, you know, sometimes that comes into play with my stories, my future stories. If I'm waiting on a callback about something or I need to clarify an extra detail, then yes, we will add something to the print edition. But that change will also show up online.
Are people really, let's say, easily willing to cooperate with you in providing stories and so on? Do you find that people are easy to talk to?
Yeah, I think that's one of my strengths, is connecting with different types of people, whether it's a single mom walking her children to school in a rough part of town or a CEO of some corporate organization in town. I strive to find those different types of people and make those connections.
How do you read people to do that?
Ask questions. No, just I try to stay open myself and make people comfortable, and I think that puts people at ease as well.
Do you run out of ideas quickly, or how do you replenish? You know, you shouldn't – if you're going to be writing features, you have to be continually generating subjects in your mind or thinking of topics you haven't covered and so on.
Journalism is definitely a lifestyle, no matter – what type of writing or reporting you're doing. But I have a list of stories that I want to pursue, and usually I have connected with that individual or place or reached out to them in some way. But like I said before, I have been getting a lot of feedback and tips from people, whether it's through letters or emails or phone calls. So I continually add to that list of story ideas.
What, describe your writing process, Jack. Do you start with notes? Do you ever make an outline? Do you find one little phrase that suddenly gives you the direction for the whole article? Or,
well, when I'm interviewing someone, I take notes, and I also usually record the conversation. And if there's a certain quote or phrase that jumps out at me, I will write down the moment in time that person said that quote or phrase, so I can go back and make sure I quote them correctly. But when it's time to sit down and write, I usually do create an outline. It just helps put the puzzle together and organize the flow of the story.
I imagine the use of a recorder is important in getting the quotes right. I remember once I had when I was in the Senate, a reporter came in to interview me, whom I knew, and I thought, I'm just going to respond in cliches. So I did. Everything was a cliche. He wrote the story, and it was cliches, but not the ones I gave him. So I thought that was funny. But trying to get the quote just right, when I see reporters scribbling, I generally, they're interviewing me,
right,
I slow down.
And we appreciate that.
But does everybody use a recorder now?
I think it depends. you know, some reporters do, some don't.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer it, even though it takes some extra time. You know, getting that correct quote and accuracy is important to me. That's how you gain sources. That's how you gain people's trust, I believe. So it is vital to being a journalist.
Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to the newspapers? I mean, the doom has been pronounced by all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine a world without newspapers. I can't imagine even my first cup of coffee without opening, you know, the Times is what we open first and then go on to others.
But, Roald, we're old fogies, you know.
I know we are, but
the world is changing. Not in ways I appreciate, but it is changing.
Is there a sense of doom in the Times office? Or?
Well, I think we're all under a lot of pressure to produce
several
stories a week. And news isn't going anywhere. I think just the ways we're sharing news and telling stories is changing. There's more content now more than ever online, you know, with different sources. Well, you have these traditional media organizations, and then you have these newer blog-type websites that are coming up. So there is more content now than ever. But there is a lot of pressure to produce.
But, you know, the thing that we've always treasured about newspapers is the stories are edited and checked. How about when you rush to get a story online?
It's edited and checked.
It is.
Yes. So an editor will always read my story before it goes online.
Uh-huh.
But back to Roald's question about the future of newspapers, and you may disagree with this, guys, but it's a tough time for journalism. Could be the toughest right now and in future years. But like I said, news isn't going anywhere. Just it's changing. So we're trying to stay ahead of that by becoming more digital savvy and learning these different ways to share stories with our audiences.
Do you take videos too?
Yes. We're expected to shoot video at least every week and produce a short video to go online to accompany our written stories.
Mm-hmm. So you pretty much wind up becoming a complete TV, radio, newspaper operator. You've got to get all the media under your hat.
Well, that's the goal, and I think it's fun, too, to learn these, you know, different skills across various platforms.
Well, Jack, we enjoy reading your stuff, so keep it in that form for as long as you can.
Appreciate that.
Jack Cullen has been our guest today, who writes Notes at Noon for the Quad City Times and gets around a lot. Here's a fellow who gets around but always comes up with the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, today is the first day of April, and it is the start of Poetry Month. And the next four programs will get into poetry. And at that point, I'll write a little epic or
well, okay.
Saluting my good friend Roald Tweet, who is a pain about poetry. I think next week we'll talk about the state of poetry, or we'll talk among ourselves, and we'll drum up some poets to talk to. In the meantime, are you reading anything interesting?
Well, before I tell you about the book that I would like to begin Poetry Month with, let me mention that in a week, next Friday, that famous Bettendorf Library book sale, the Friends of the Bettendorf Library book sale, begins Friday the 7th and Saturday the 8th and Sunday the 9th. 20,000 items are going to be for sale. Probably 18,000 of those are books. The rest might be records and CDs and so forth. Most of the books at that sale are 50 cents each. And Friday at 5, the sale begins, but that's the members' preview sale. However, people have been known to show up at the door and pay their $5 and join the Bettendorf Friends of the Library and go right in and get their pick of the first pick of the books. It ends Sunday when the sale is noon to 4 p.m. And by the end of the sale, I think you can pick up books for $1 a sack.
Really?
So if you have any desire to add to your library, this is the sale to be. They spend all year collecting books, whole books from people who have died. Their libraries go to the Bettendorf Public Library sale. So I would recommend that.
You know, that pains me to hear that. I have books for which I paid $150. I mean, you know, when you resell them, you're not going to get $150 for them.
No.
I look
50 cents.
Yeah, I look at that row of books from the Folio Society, and what was I thinking?
Those would not be 50 cents over there.
Yeah.
They do pick out books that are first editions, signed editions, and some of those have a very hefty price at the sale.
Oh.
These are just your average run of the Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn.
How are you going to get rid of your books?
That is a sore point at our house right now because
your house.
I seem to be gathering more books. You know, just when I get rid of 5 books and I end up with 6.
I know.
I don't
have Bernadette around to chastise me anymore.
I do not envy. I just hope I sell the house to a reader.
You know, Bernadette used to chastise me, and now I have to chastise myself, but I do a pretty good job of it. I look at those books and I think, how did you build this fortress of books? What is going to happen here? You know, if the house doesn't collapse from it, what will I do?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
I do have a book to recommend that is a great start to Poetry Month. It's a book by Ben Lerner, who's himself a poet, a novelist, and one of Mark MacArthur Foundation, one of those genius grants, got a Guggenheim Award. He wrote a short little 80-page essay called The Hatred of Poetry, and it is a gem. He's a great critic of poetry, and his thesis is the hatred of poetry is not the average person who hates poetry and doesn't understand it, but it's the artists themselves, the poets themselves, who constantly complain about the fact that poetry doesn't work, right? And they hate it. Marion Moore starts out her famous essay, her poem on poetry, by saying, "I, too, dislike it." And it goes, and this is a book about everybody from Keats to Whitman to Emily Dickinson to William Blake who find the writing of poetry frustrating because the poem is just the fossil of the poetry that was there.
Is it called I Hate Poetry?
The Hatred of Poetry.
And the author?
Ben Lerner. It is a great read.
Okay, well, I suppose that's a good way to start out Poetry Month, by hating poetry.
Right.
Okay, but that'll do it for now. We'll dig into poetry next week and all month, so join us next time on Scribble.